What you got on your mind, Will?
Bermuda Triangle. Caitlyn Jenner. And that dude that ate those Rice Krispies with Hershey syrup and Mark Eden.
Some weird stuff, man. Some real weird stuff. Yeah.
How about you, bud?
Talking about cool staircases, ice cream, and knots. Definitely ghosts in this building. I do have a plan.
What's the plan?
I got some things I want to share.
Share away.
Subject, and your recent one, which has just come out, Watchers 10, is set to release some very interesting information about the Paracas skulls, the elongated skulls.
This is going to be my PSA.
So to begin with, can you explain a little bit about these skulls and what makes them, you know, interesting as a point of study?
Well, first of all, the backstory is this. Someone sent me a link about 3 or 4 years ago showing Brian Forrester down in Senior Wands. Paracas History Museum, and he's holding skulls like this is the cast. He's holding a skull like this, and you know, saying, "Come down to Paracas, come down to Paracas." And so I emailed Brian, and we struck up a conversation and a friendship, which has been ongoing. And you know, frankly, without Senior Juan and then Brian underneath him, none of this would have happened. You know, I've written like 10 different books, and the first three books were novels called the Nephilim Trilogy. So I've been in this, researching this, really for 25 years. And that's why we were so interested in going down to the Paracas History Museum, talking to Senior Juan, talking to Brian Forrester, trying as much evidence as we possibly could. We've gone down there like 3 different times. We're still not done. We've never been able to take real good bone samples. And what I mean by that is when you go in with a Dremel tool, let's say down here where the foramen magnum might be, somewhere in this area of the skull, and drill into this. This is virgin bone, and that's what we're after. So you would drill in with a Dremel tool, blow it out with air, and then drill in again and collect that powder. And basically, you're taking the contamination levels way, way down. It's fresh genetic material. We've learned this. We've teamed up with a Canadian lab and two other labs here in the States. This is real hardcore scientific evidence. When we're down there now, we've learned this, collecting samples, full bodies. suit with boots, with two sets of gloves, two sets of arms, a hairnet and a face mask. So, I mean, you're completely garbed up. And when we go back down, take DNA samples, and that's in the works. We've been trying to do that because the work is ongoing. In the meantime, we were able to legally, and I can't stress that enough, legally take out hair samples, providing there's no scalp attached to the hair. To the best of my ability, hair that fell off. One of the skulls we tested actually was this guy. And you can see over here on the side, you can see the little patch of red was still there. Hair on these mummies, eventually, once they're exhumed by the Vaccaros, the grave robbers, and sold to Senior Juan, who keeps them and collects them in his museum. But we had samples. We had four hair samples that came out of Paracas, and then one sample from La Orojo, Peru, which is a mining town now, one of the most polluted places on Earth. And this very elongated skull, and I'll send you JPEGs of that if you want, but you can actually go to the website and look at Watchers 10. That's the skull. If you just look at Watchers 10, the cover, that's the skull. It's in a private collection in Oregon. This man's grandfather was a medical doctor. And probably in the 30s or 40s, we're not sure of the provenance behind it. We've tried to get it out of family members. Nobody knows anything. Because this is decades ago. But the guy was a doctor. And all these skulls, he had three of them. What looked like a Native American, the Oregon skull, and a human skull. Just a natural, you know, sapien.
For comparison.
But they're all in a pot together. So that's all cross-contamination. So that's why our results were skewed except for the powder. And we were all dressed up in the garb from the Canadian lab. And we extracted really good powder from this very elongated Oregon skull. And here's the deal, April. This skull is completely different looking than this skull here. And I'll bring this up in just a second. And I mean like really, really different. This skull may have been Cradle Headboard. Okay, I don't think it is. But, you know, there's a possibility that it might have been Cradle Headboard. The reason why I don't think it is because the position of the foramen magnum, which is right here, is back towards the rear of the skull, back here. A normal magnum would be closer to the jawline. And in Watchers 10, we sit down with an archaeologist who studied over 1,000 skulls, specifically looking at the placement of the foramen magnum. He wrote a paper and comes on the record in Watchers 10, and of course in my new book, Nephilim Hybrids, which is a shameless plug. But, you know, I mean, and he comes in on it, show and tell, what can I tell you? He comes in on the record and states that the Paraca skull, the position of the foramen magnum, is completely different than a normal human being. It's also smaller, which lends itself to our theory that this is not cradle headboarding, this is genetic. Now,
It's also very... It's extremely elongated. I mean, there have been elongated skulls found all around the world, and, you know, some of them are, you know, slightly elongated, or they're very flat on the forehead, but this one's different. I mean, it's really long.
I completely concur with you. And what's exciting is the DNA evidence. So we've got four skulls that we examined hair from, and the fifth skull is the very elongated skull, which looks actually, I'll show this up to you. This is the Some of these guys came across the Bering Strait, we get it. But people are curious, and people build things like ships with sails. And Thor Heyerdahl, in his book, Ra Kon-Tiki, proved that you could sail across the Pacific. But Ra, which is much lesser known than Kon-Tiki, proved that you could build a papyrus boat, which the Egyptians had 3,000 years ago, or even earlier than that, put a sail on that puppy, and without any knowledge of anything, sail out the Mediterranean, you wind up in Barbados.
Yeah.
Not a compass, without doing anything, the tides will take you there. The currents will take you there. So he proved it could be done. That's the first thing. The second thing is the Paracas people show up about 3,500 years ago on the shores of Paracas. And what's interesting of this, our hypothesis from the get-go has been about 3,500 years ago, according to the ancient Hebrew text that we read, Joshua and Caleb were given a mandate by Yehovah to go into what is known as the Promised Land or the Levant and wipe out all these people there. Now, as Richard Dawkins so eloquently states, that's genocidal. And I get that. I mean, you know, a mandate from this Jehovah guy to go in and kill all these other people, men, women, and children, that's genocidal, that's maniacal, that's capricious. I mean, that goes against, everybody just goes, whoa, what's going on? Unless we figure in something. We figure in, and this is where my hypothesis comes in, that the tribes that are there are not human. First of all,
right.
They're not human. They're the Nephilim. And what we read in the text, the account, is the Nephilim, the Raphaim, the Zamzumim, the Emim, the Anakim, all are there. And what we think happened is when Joshua and Caleb began to push into this area and decimate the tribe, these hybrid entities, some were giants, some had long necks. I mean, there's different genetic characteristics, which the name denote, like Anakim Skywalker, guess where he got that from. The Anakim means long neck. And
right.
We found evidence of that in the Baraka skulls by the positioning of the foramen magnum, but I digress. That these skulls may have, in fact, had long necks. Now, does that mean that the descendants of the Anakim, we don't know that. More research has to be done before we can make a claim like that. But it is interesting that a forensic artist, Marcia Moore, who Brian introduced me to, Brian Forger introduced me to, posited that because of the position of the foramen magnum, these people, whatever they were, may have had elongated necks, very, very elongated necks. And this ties back into the Anakim, which is translated long neck. Just saying, it's a very interesting linguistic characteristic. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Interesting connection. So that's what we believe happened. And if so, then maybe we'll find evidence of that markers in DNA. First of all, we were only able to extract mitochondrial DNA. Which comes,
so that's from the mother's side.
From the mother's side of the, you know, basically the DNA with the chromosome. A little bit of nuclear DNA was extracted, not enough to sequence. So
right.
This is why when we go down and we get permission, we drill and drill and drill and drill and take this. One thing I've learned through this in the last 3 years, if you have an opportunity to take samples, you know,
take as much as you can.
As much as you possibly can before you get yelled at. I mean, that's it.
Yes.
That's ask for forgiveness rather than permission. So, four of the hairs, out of the four hairs which came from Paracas, one of them would not sequence at all. No sequencing at all. That was down in a place called Camacho. The other three skulls were in Senior Juan's museum.
Okay.
All of the haplogroups came back H2A, which is a haplogroup. The greatly elongated skull that goes back horizontal and is on the cover of Watchers 10. The powder came back T2B, which is Mesopotamia and Syria, which is the heart of the Fertile Crescent, which is what I have come to call, before any of this testing ever began, Nephilim Central. That's where all the mischief happened thousands of years ago. That's where it started.
I mean, that's huge information, because that really changes the history of, you know, migration to the Americas and what we currently understand about how the Americas were populated.
It does. It rewrites history as we know it. Academics who will look at this will scoff because they have the Darwinian paradigm checked, and they don't want to move off of that, and I understand that. All we're doing, and they'll come after me, and L.A. Marzulli's not a scientist, and he's, you know, a sensationalist, and all the anonymous attacks. Attack the evidence, folks. You know, go down, get your own samples, pay for a DNA lab, and then come back to me with your science, not just your armchair, you know, delivery on a Monday morning quarterback type deal. Do some science like we've done. What the thing is it points to a Middle Eastern origin. It's still too early to tell what we're looking at. More testing needs to be done, and that's why we're on the trail, April. That's why we're planning to go down with an expedition. We've got archaeologists lined up. We've got three labs lined up. And by the way, the hair that was tested came from three different labs. One lab was not able to sequence anything. The other lab came up with all the European stuff. The third lab had this particular skull, T2B. Mm-hmm. Which is Syria, Mesopotamia. The bottom line is, it's not Asian, and it's and it's European / Middle Eastern, which is exactly what my hypothesis states. And so it's once again pointing back to the veracity of our hypothesis, which is built on these ancient biblical texts that we find.
Now, something that is quite unique about the Parappa skulls is the color of their hair, because a lot of them have red hair, and I think others are sort of more blonde in color. And that's obviously, you know, out of place in South America, where the indigenous people have dark hair. So what's the significance of that? I mean, are people, the people at the time from Mesopotamia, did they have that coloring of hair? Do you know anything about the origins of that?
Yes, all the red hair comes from the Middle East and Europe. That's where it originates from. And so again, you know, we said, you know, red hair. I mean, look, when we unwrap that 2,000-year-old baby skull, again, you know, thank you, Brian Forrester. Thank you, Senior Juan Navarro. Thank you, Joe Taylor, and our archaeologist. Let's give credit where credit is due. You know, Aaron Junkins, Chase Klotsky, our forensic team leader, and of course, Richard Shaw, my business partner and director of the Watching Series. We're down. We got this team of people. Ron Moorhead's there. I mean, this whole team of people, you know, looking at this stuff, and Senior Juan allowed us to unwrap this 2,000-year-old baby mummy skull, greatly elongated. I was able to take a little small sample of the crumbling textiles, carbon 14 dated. It was like 1,940 years, plus or minus 30. I mean, it's almost a 2,000-year-old mummy skull. We're unwrapping this. Who gets to do this stuff? And the hair was strawberry blonde. More
really?
Yeah, and it was fine like baby hair. And so, you know, the hair is what we tested from the baby skull, and that was European. That was European.
Yeah.
So,
you mentioned about this area in Mesopotamia being a hotspot, possible extraterrestrial hybrid, and so on. Now, does that anything extraterrestrial show up in the DNA results?
Or? We don't have a full profile. And I want to clarify something. When you say extraterrestrial, and this is going to blow some of my constituents away, I agree with you, but not in the same sense that you're saying. But
not an alien flying down, you know, in a spaceship.
But anything not from this planet is, by definition, an extraterrestrial. And so I will use that word in this particular context. Yes, extraterrestrials came down and, you know, were messing with the genome. What they were is a class, according to this ancient Hebraic text, they were known as watcher angels. Angel just means messenger. That's all it means. So whatever these entities were, they were called the watchers. The Book of Enoch, very interesting book, talks about them. They landed on Mount Hermon, and then they took wives from wherever they went, and then this whole Nephilim thing started. So that's my hypothesis, and that's why I'm sticking to it. But you're right. In the classic sense, whatever these entities are, they are extraterrestrial.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what are the plans then for future testing? I mean, is it on the cards to replicate the results, and what's the timescale for that?
Getting anything done in Peru, you might as well just take a really long siesta and not be in a rush to do anything. This has been ongoing for 3 years. This is the third Peruvian archaeologist we've been working with. It's our third American archaeologist we've been working with. We have two. We have Mondo Gonzalez, who's written a lot of paperwork, and we have another archaeologist by the name of Rick Woodward. Both of our team members, Chase Klotsky, will definitely come down and work all the forensics with us, because she's just absolutely stellar and superlative in the field. Takes, you know, something falls off, Chase is there, boom, it gets bagged, labeled, and that's it. It's a whole chain of custody. And that's what we need for this. So we're just waiting. We have verbal permission from the head archaeologist at a well-known museum.
And the labs that did the testing are in the States?
Two in the States, one in Canada. And here's the deal.
Okay.
When we went into these labs, we told them nothing.
So it was a random?
Not a thing. We, you know, hey, we're testing this really weird skull. Nothing like that. Nothing like that. We just said, here's some ancient hair from a mummy. They need to know that, because it's the way they test it. It's all we said. And then later on, we showed them what they were testing, and of course, they all freaked out. Oh my gosh, what? Just like, and who was?
You showed them. You showed them after the results were
after
produced.
The results, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
That's all on camera, by the way.
Okay, yeah. Well, LA, thank you so much for sharing that information. It's really amazing. Yeah, we look forward to delving in deeper on Watchers 10, which shows the full story as it unfolds.
And the other thing, just so you know, this little guy in the book has gone viral.
Yes!
Yeah!
Yes! Yeah!
Alright, dirtbags. Will's gonna give you a song next. Enjoy it.
Respect.
Got a game for you.
Let's do it.
Okay. Fill in the blank. Okay. Don't assume my blank.
Nipples.
What?
Nipples. Don't assume your nipples.
Don't assume my favorite kind of sandwich. Your turn.
I like...
You have to start with filling, don't assume.
Fill in the blank.
Don't assume my...
Oh, don't assume.
You know what? I'm sorry. It was stupid. No, it was stupid.
Don't assume my...
Don't assume your what?
Guess.
I don't know.
Gender.
Whoa. I'm sorry.
Got you there. Original.
Don't assume my type or color of underwear. Don't assume it. Don't assume it. Don't assume what type it is either, for that matter. You don't need to know.
I don't need to know.
You don't need to be thinking about that.
But now I'm thinking about it.
Don't think about it.
So I'm assuming.
Look, don't assume my...
Socks are dirty.
Come on, you gotta get off the clothing. You gotta be a more original.
Now I'm stuck on
that.
Clothing.
I know, it's tough.
You got me stuck on it.
I'm tough on favorites. Or I'm stuck on it. Don't assume my emotional disorders.
Lit! Yeah! Yes.
You know, this is the Will Manson special, and you're not really giving me that much.
Don't assume my president is...
A bad guy.
A bad guy.
Don't assume it.
Don't assume it.
He's a good man.
I'm stuck on these Rice Krispies, dude. Honestly.
You need to try it, bro.
I'm gonna try it tomorrow.
And then you're gonna be that weird guy. What if it's just a fucking vicious cycle?
If you were able every night to dream any dream you wanted.
Do not. Just don't try it. Don't do that.
Yes, you began again.
It's not that much of a special.
But if you dream, you would fulfill all your wishes.
I want to yell some more, but I won't.
Yeah,
you would fulfill all your wishes. You would fulfill all your wishes.
Don't assume my natural hair color. We'll be right back. Hooah! Hooah! Yeah! Yeah. Will, do you have any closing statements for us, William? Anything?
If you mix Hershey's syrup with Rice Krispies, this is just Cocoa Krispies.
Not unless you buy the copyright. You are listening to WJRH 104.9 FM, Lafayette College Radio in Easton, Pennsylvania. This was Late Night Low Fidelity. Definitely without Slater Stark. What a loser. Starring Will Manson.
Yeah!
All right, everybody. Have a good night.